This is episode 470. Have you lived your life using food, alcohol, drugs, shopping, gambling, or any other crux as a means of running away or distracting yourself from your real problems? For those of us that have wrestled with self-sabotage cycles or patterns of self-destruction on really any level, this is a conversation we're having for you. I speak with a meditation and mental health expert about how our parents are the starting place for all of the damage that we grow up to carry, and why it feels so hard to change those parts of ourselves. We talk about personal development as a whole. We talk about the entitled snowflake generation that the kids of today seem to be, where they're talking about their feelings way too much. We talk about spiritual narcissists that actually weaponize their personal development. We also talk about the generation, which might be yours, where talking about feelings or your problems is a big no-no. It's a social crime. And how we can actually use a unique technique called natural meditation, which is probably different to anything you've heard before, can actually lead to huge releases of emotion that leave you permanently changed, and many would even say healed, problem overcome. So to join this forever evolving rabbit hole of a conversation that we had just before, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome to today's conversation where this year it's my mission to support 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean dealing with what's really weighing you down and not just the number on the scale. Links to chat about how we help people with the mindset behind their food and weight challenges and how we do it without counting calories are down in the show notes in the caption below. So scroll down, click, book a time, and let's have a conversation. So previously, we had Matthew Zoltan on the show, episodes 311, 313, and 397, talking about natural meditation and why most forms of meditation, spirituality, and religion are actually bogus nonsense. And if me saying that got you fired up, then start with episode 311 to really understand that conversation and perspective, because it's likely to challenge some deeply held beliefs, which it did for me too. So go and give that episode a listen. But anyway, getting to the point is that on today's show, we have Kate Zoltan, the amazing woman and wife that stands alongside Matthew. Kate is the co-founder and co-creator of the Undo app and Quiet Retreats, both of which help people simplify the process of becoming mentally well. Kate, my friend, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the introduction, Maddie. It's lovely being here, actually.
Oh, I'm excited that we've talked on the back end a bunch, but I'm excited that we actually get to hit record this time and share a bit of this, well, wherever we go with the world.
Yes, me too. Yeah, let's see where we go.
So maybe a good place to start is, like, I'm often fascinated by people who end up questioning everything that they thought they knew about, pick an area of life. But in maybe our case, it's broadly speaking health, and then maybe more specifically mental health. And there's usually this moment, and I've had it too, particularly with medicine and nutrition, where a person realizes that the mainstream approach is not working, not just for them, but actually they start going deeper and discover it's not working for a lot of people. So I'm curious for you, what was the first sort of crack in the foundation, that moment that you thought, wait, what we've been thinking about mental health and wellness is completely backwards?
I think probably when I was on, it was definitely on the first meditation retreat that I sat on with Matthew. I was always a little bit alternative, if you like. I never really was into the doctors and going to the medical profession, and I never really kind of ate meat. And so I've just always have been a little bit of an outlier. So when I first sat on the meditation retreat with Matthew, I just felt so relaxed and, I guess, so at home. And it wasn't until probably 3 or 4 days in. And so I'd been looking for a solution to my mental health problems, and I just couldn't find any answers that were direct and satisfying. And just, it was just like, this is, I'm insane and I can't find any answers. I'd tried counselors and therapists and drugs and all of that, and nothing was helping. And so when, and then as you're kind of going through that journey, you're always looking and reading things. Certain things just stick, don't they? Like you read something about, I don't know, how to, or things that just resonate with your being, but they're not quite answered. So like whether you believe in God or not, it's like, well, is there really a God, and how come there's so many gods? So why do they believe in this God and not that God? And is there really, you get past that, and then you're like, well, is there really something else aside from us? And so there's all these sort of, there's all these open questions that just never really get answered. And it wasn't until I sat on the retreat with Matthew, he just started answering all these questions that were just unopened or just not finished. So it was really at that point that I really just felt, okay, this guy's for real and this is it. So I can actually now start deconstructing all my beliefs and ideas, and knowing that it literally everything just comes back to the body, that there's, if you don't go outside of the body in terms of mental health, then that's where, it's only until you start thinking outside of the body do you start the mental health problem. So it kind of came right back to that for me. And yeah, I think that was probably the point that everything changed. It was like, oh, okay, this is a very different way to start thinking. And then also the immediate effects of just that, the stability, I guess, or the just the knowing of that in my system just settled me down immediately. And then you can start asking the other questions that still aren't answered by everybody else in the medical profession or psychological world or religious world or spiritual world. Then you can start actually figuring out all those questions for yourself, because you've got enough understanding to answer them from yourself. Whereas previous to that, you're just like, your mind's just boggled and you're confused. So yeah, but that's probably, I guess, where it started.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're open to it, but like you said, you'd been trying to figure out your own insanity or navigating some of your own stuff. Like, what did that look like before you began down this sort of meditation path? Like, what was going on in your day-to-day life that you thought, like, oh, I really need to change this? Like, this sucks.
Well, I was depressed. I was diagnosed with depression. So I was just really, you're just negative all the time. And I was very angry, like super, super angry and overreactionary and very super sensitive, I would say, but not really. Mm-hmm. Now I look back on it, I think I wasn't that super sensitive. It was more, I was surrounded by people who were insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just took all that on as me being too emotional or whatever. So, but there was this underlying thought or underlying question of what is wrong with me? Like, I know I can feel it in my system. What is wrong with me? And it was trying to figure out that question and that constant questioning of yourself of what is wrong with me without knowing what is wrong with me. That's actually a very harmful thing to do to yourself. And it's not until you start to understand that the feelings that are in your body are meant to be there, and they're always there for a reason. Like, they are always there for a reason. They don't just happen. You don't just get born like with something wrong with you, if that mentally. Some event or something has caused that confusion in you. So once you start figuring that out, then you start feeling a lot better. But yeah, that took a long time, or a few years of meditating, to start to really understand what was wrong with me. And as soon as I found out what was wrong with me, again, there was just like when I first sat on that first retreat and that life-changing moment, again, that happened again when I found out what the problem was.
Mm.
Then I was like, oh, it's another level of just a relaxation and relief within your whole system. And then your mental health just gets more and more stable. The more you understand, the more you figure out the things that you're questioning in yourself. You're questioning them usually for a reason. And once you get those answers, you relax. So everything, you just get more and more mentally healthy, I suppose, as time goes on.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned, like, mentally, we're born with nothing wrong. Arguably, as they say, a newborn baby is like purity and perfection in human form. And it seems like every podcast guest that I've had on for the last few months, I just show them photos of my baby, which I did to you before as well. But it's so interesting being in this world of health transformation and talking trauma with people and talking stories and beliefs and having evidence of like this little bundle of joy that's just right now in a phase of his life where every need is met. And the thing that Yali and I were talking about is like there's almost lessons to be learned because he embodies every need, desire, emotion that he experiences, and he experiences it to completion as well, like until, because he's got no inhibitions at all. Right. And there are, and inhibitions, I guess, in this context of this conversation, are stories that we learn about where it is okay to express emotion and where it's not okay and where it is safe and where it's not safe. And so it's just interesting being where I guess I am in my career, let's say, and looking at this kid who's a couple of weeks, couple of months old and thinking like, oh my God, how can I be more like him? But also, how can I not fuck him up? Basically.
Yeah, I bet that's at the forefront of your mind right now. And it's, yeah, it's going to be, that's a tough one because that's, it is a lot to do with your parents, why we get so fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's, I think there's any easy way around it. Gee, you'd have to be a pretty amazing person to not instill or impose or influence or demand or traumatize your child. I'm not saying it's not possible, but yeah, you have to have a lot of consideration for that human organism in front of you. But yeah, I think that was interesting. You said everything that he experiences at the moment comes to around to completion.
Yeah.
I think that is a really interesting point that you made there. And that I think is where it starts when a child is crying and the parent gets sick of the child crying and they're like, shut up, shh, it's okay, it's okay, it'll be okay. Well, will it be okay? It may not be okay. If there's something that's really devastating or bad has happened, may not be okay. It's these positions, I would say, or influences that the feelings that they're uncomfortable with, they're imposing on that child and restricting that child just because they're uncomfortable with the crying or the noise or something. It's literally just a noise. Who cares if he cries for hours? He might need to cry for hours sometimes.
Yeah, to let it out, to get to completion.
To get to completion, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be a very sensitive road you're on now to ensure that he doesn't get too messed with.
Well, and it's interesting too because you think about like either my own childhood or people who had it much worse. And it's interesting because there's a lot of people that make great successes of themselves because of their traumatic, oppressed childhood. And then there are children that are given everything all of the time. And then they grow up to just be entitled. And so it feels like either extreme creates a problem. It's like you can be too horrible and you can be too giving. And so, which is why everybody says parenting doesn't come with a manual. But I'm curious to sort of bring this back to our conversation is as adults, as we sit in these meditations, as we do these healings, what is the beginning of allowing ourselves to be comfortable with feeling emotions to completion?
I think it takes a lot of understanding, actually, just to know and notice actually and admit too when you're interfering with yourself, because it just boils down to that really, is that we're just interfering with ourselves all the time and not letting our body process feelings that are naturally there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's past or present feelings. And so if we're not able to see where those interferences are coming from and how we're doing that or how we're interfering with ourselves, then we're not actually able to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you sit, like when you sit on a meditation retreat, because you're so quiet and so slow, you actually are able to, like, all your thoughts slow down because you're walking so slowly. So your thoughts come in line with the speed that you're going at. So, you know, when you're rushing really, really fast because you're in a rush and you've got so much thinking going on and you think that you have to, but your thoughts actually speed up with that as well. Yeah. But as you, again, on the other side, if you slow down, then you're actually able to catch the things that you do on a day-by-day basis and probably most of the day or 95% of the day where you're, you know, like undermining yourself or just not allowing yourself to be what you are and feel the way that you feel. And there's also all the impositions from externally, from society and family and workers, colleagues. There's a way you're meant to be in society, isn't there? And so these are all external, like, boundaries that we've got to live amongst. So you not understanding that, or you not realizing that you can actually live with those boundaries and still be yourself, until you understand that, then you are constantly just trying to change yourself. But you don't really have to change yourself. You just have to realize that, okay, these are the boundaries I'm in. I can't have a nervous breakdown right now because I've got these people around me. So I better just feel it and contain it and get on with what I'm doing. And then at some other point in the day when I'm alone or in an environment where I can have a bit of a breakdown, then I can do that then.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with that is that with those boundaries that exist socially in our society, which arguably are a good thing because it doesn't mean that the whole world is disabled with their own emotions at once all of the time, like society needs to function. But I think, like, we've made it kind of not safe to feel those emotions anywhere, you know, in front of our partner, at home in front of the kids, at our workplace, with our friends, in the supermarket. Like, it feels like unless you're lucky enough to have a parent that works in the world of, or a partner that works in the world of emotional regulation or psychology or something like that, healing, that it feels like society has very few places where you can actually, one, feel the emotion, let alone feel it to completion.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that would also, just bringing it back to your child or to parenting as well, if you're not able to know when, like, the child needs to cry or... Mm-hmm. Because at some point the child, I've seen it as kids grow up, is they push it, like they'll put on a bit of an act to get a response and get a reaction. Yeah. And if that's not, like, really true to them, then that's actually harmful to them. And if the parent can't pick that up and lets that play out, then that's actually, like, a harm for that child that without the child knowing, because it's too young to know. But it's sort of, that's sort of like your role as a parent to be able to know, okay, you think that's okay, but it's not really okay because it's not honest to that child and and to that child as a being. So that's where it gets really tricky, and it's the same in society as well. Like, people, when you see, like, a drama queen, or you see the celebrities and they're just outrageously indulging, that is harmful for that person, and that is harmful for anyone around them to let them indulge in that, but nobody's calling them out. So it can get extreme. So it's an interesting, and maybe that's an interesting way to look at parenting rather than, so you really just try, the ultimate thing is you're just trying to stop that kid harming itself. So you don't actually don't have to really do anything else. You just let the kid do what it wants until it harms itself. It's like, no, that's it. That's the point where your parenting kicks in. So it gets pretty simple, I think, in the end.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to think about it from an adult perspective about our own childhoods. So it might be a case where our parent played into one of our alter egos in a way that was not truly who we were, which meant that we grew up to be an adult that expresses a version of ourself, which gets the attention, gets the needs met, but isn't our true self.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess that means we end up with people walking around feeling misaligned or getting depression and having these kind of symptoms because they are trying to be someone they're not, which is, I would argue, a good portion of people are always trying to put on a face, put on a facade, show up in a certain way because they believe that's what's expected of them, when actually it might be that their authority / parental figures validated the wrong version of them.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And but the other thing, the other reason behind that is that person, the reason that persona or alter ego, that you, as you called it, has begun, is that person didn't get their needs met. So they've had to scream out to get attention in some way. And the person who has been parenting or has been around them and has let them continue with that attention-seeking behavior is actually, yeah, letting them indulge in that thing, that in that behavior that is wrong for them, rather than actually giving them the attention that they need. Like, you see it all the time in anywhere you go, supermarket, whatever. Like, the parents nowadays, especially because everybody's on their phones, it's like they're taking their kid for a walk or they're taking their kid down the park, but the mother's just sitting on the bench on her phone and the kid's having a nice time. But it's kind of the time where they need to be connecting, and that kid needs the needs attention and parenting and the love and support and nurturing that a child needs. But if the parent is on the phone all the time, they're so disconnected from the kid. So that is just going to cause the child to then know that its needs, it's like genuine needs, aren't being met. And those genuine needs are then going to come out as a, I'm going to scream because that's the only way I can get her attention, or I'm going to hurt myself because that's another way I can get attention, or I'm going to just cry or get angry or throw things or whatever, because they're not actually getting the need met. And the need is that their genuine need is that they, like you said, like fundamentally you have to do everything for your child because it can't do it. So it's a genuine need that's not getting met in the first place that is causing all these alter egos or personas or egos, whatever, personality. And that leads into split personalities, schizophrenia, depression, all of it. It all comes from that.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I guess, you know, and you probably see this all the time as well, like so many people that I work with have this challenge of like, I know what I want to be, like I know who I should be, but I can't seem to change it. And there's this attachment to that version of themselves. It's like the devil I know is better than the devil I don't saying, because even though the part of the person that they are showing up as currently is wounded, is hurt, is vulnerable, is shameful, is embarrassed, all of those emotions, but the things that they do and the patterns they're in that create that scenario is something that they can't seem to untether themselves from, because from when they were very young, that's what they needed to do to get their needs met.
Yeah, and the easy way back to that is they need to, because those needs weren't being met, and I'm sure over time those needs were not being met, and as we talked about before, that those needs are then, they're not being met, but the parent is attending the needs of that alter personality or that the persona, the attention-seeking persona. So that part of the person is getting the attention, and the part that's not, that needs the attention, the genuine need, hasn't got them at their needs met. So all they need to do really, and it sounds simple, I know, it's so easy to say, but it's not. So what's happened there is there's a disconnect between the true person, like you said, and the alter, or the alter ego. And then if the person actually just needs to get back in touch with their true person, and that's where all those feelings are held, because they don't get, they don't really get felt until they, you can actually feel it in your body. And because that person has had that dissatisfaction with not getting their needs met from their parent or not getting the proper attention that they need, then there's a feeling of, well, there'll be a lot of feelings like missing out. So I've missed out. My parent doesn't like me for whatever reason. There's all going to be a whole big story around it. But if they can get past that story and just come back to the actual feeling of either like disappointment or sadness or upset or whatever it is because their parent actually has been overlooking them and ignoring them on a level that is fundamental to that organism, that's very upsetting. So that's there's going to be a big feeling in that feeling of almost a rejection for some people.
Yeah.
So that is, until that feeling gets felt and felt in the body, then it won't actually release. So that, and then once the feeling gets felt, then that actual, the persona and the attention seeking behavior then feels fulfilled because it's actually been fulfilled by the person themselves as they've grown as into an adult. And then that feeling can dissipate and the person's going to just resolve that whole anxiety or anxiousness around that actual feeling. Is that making sense?
Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts, quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it, and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. Yeah, that makes sense. The bit that I think people, in my experience, get maybe not stuck on, but maybe the words disillusioned with or overwhelmed by, is that once they arrive at they've peeled back the layers of the onion, they've started to really look at themselves and learn to self-observe, to see what's happening, what's coming up. And then we finally get in touch with that emotion. And then maybe we cry about it. Maybe we rage about it. Then the question is often, how many times do I need to do this before it's gone? Like, I'm feeling, I don't want to feel like this. Is why I've been avoiding it for 50 years already. This is why I've been eating my way away from this feeling, or this is why I've been drinking my way away from this feeling, or whatever the alternative pathway to escape that experience is. Once we get there, the question is often like, how long am I going to be here? Like, this feels shit. How much feeling? And so I guess it's a very arbitrary question, but what's your response to that question of like, well, how long do I need to be in the mud before it no longer becomes mud?
Well, it depends how muddy you are, really, doesn't it?
That's a good answer.
how muddy are you? Like, some people haven't had such a bad effect from others or haven't been treated so badly by others, yet some have. Like, you look at a person who's been abused as a young child they're going to have a lot of mud. And for them to expect themselves to be able to just feel it for 10 minutes and think that it'll be gone or expect it to be gone, that's pretty harsh on yourself to even expect that.
Yeah.
So the way people think about their pain is we have been so heavily conditioned to thinking that our pain is something that we need to avoid, that we should be distracting from, that we don't actually want to feel. Mm-hmm. You get to a point in this process of feeling, and it happens pretty quickly, and most people we are finding nowadays, there has actually been a bit of a shift in this younger generation where they actually want to feel. Mm. And that is the main thing that they are wanting to do. So it's this older generation I've noticed, like my generation, because mm-hmm. I'm a little bit older than your target market maybe, but yeah, I think we were heavily conditioned to just drug it out, cut it out, numb it out, drink it away, smoke it away, do whatever you want, but whatever, you don't feel it.
Don't express it to anyone. No one else can handle it.
Don't tell anyone about it. Yeah. So, but now the tides have changed from what mm-hmm. I'm seeing now, that I've seen recently, probably in the last 3 or 4 years, the people coming through, they're actually more distressed not feeling their pain than they are avoiding their pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big change. So I don't like to use the word mindset, but it's more of an unlearning that question yourself, challenge yourself. Don't just go along with that bullshit that, oh, I don't want to feel my pain. This feels like shit. I don't want to feel like shit. Well, if you've been abused as a kid, you're going to feel like shit. That's the reality. You're going to. So why avoid it so that your whole entire life is about running away from and avoiding certain situations that put you in touch with that pain or that feeling or that sensation? It literally is a sensation. It's a distress in your body. If you feel that sensation, it can go away. Mm-hmm. Like, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want to live in fear of their feelings? Because that's what you're doing. That's what they're doing. You're literally, you're in such fear of yourself and how you feel, and when you feel awful, you don't want to feel that way. So you'll do anything to avoid that. Eat as much food as you can. I don't know if you binge eat or you've got addictions to sugar, because I'm going to eat all this chocolate because I don't want to feel the way I feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you're just harming yourself. You're just hurting your body even more than it already is hurt. So if that was a little, bring that back to a little child, would you do that to a child? If it didn't feel very good one day, oh, here, have a block of chocolate so you feel better, kid, because I don't want to deal with how you feel.
A lot of parents do that, right, in the supermarket.
They
The tantrum and a lollipop, or the tantrum and a chocolate,
Yeah, so it's serious. I find this very serious stuff this point that you've brought up, that people are just not dealing with. And if you're not dealing with your feelings, you're not actually taking responsibility for yourself. And if you're not taking responsibility for yourself, then everybody else has to take responsibility for you. And that's what's happened in the world now with the sickness industry. Like, people are just, I'm not going to eat properly because I just want to behave like a baby. So I'm just going to eat. I want to eat what I want and drink what I want. It's going to fuck me up and affect my body. It's going to destroy my health. But you take care of it, because I pay tax. And I mean, these are pretty far out opinions, I'm sure. But the reality is, it's your responsibility. Your body, your life is your responsibility. And if you can't deal with the feelings in your body, then everybody else around you is going to have to do that, because you're avoiding them, you're distracting from them, you're imposing your distress on others because of that. To me, that's not right. That's why I built an app. So people can get comfortable with their feelings. They get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and that's all it is. And it's not this big bad ogre that you're thinking is making you believe. It's just not as bad as what you think. We've been conditioned and thought and constantly told that you don't want to go there, to that big bad ogre. It's nowhere near as bad as people think. Once you start getting the hang of it, it's like, oh, wow, that's amazing. That feeling just went away. Like, I've been avoiding that feeling for 15 years and I can feel it and it's gone.
Yeah.
Instead of avoiding it, just like the path of your life has been diverted because of one feeling, and then you find out that, oh, my God, I could have felt it like 15 years ago. Like, what? Yeah, so it's just, that's what's really interesting about this approach.
I love that visual of, I love that way you just described it. It's like your whole life has been diverted because of one feeling. Like, and that really puts it into perspective. It's like, whoa, I've lived the very few years that I have here on earth, which, whether that's a long time or a short time, is whatever. But is the point, like, just this idea that it's, I've lived a narrative, an idea, a set of beliefs. I've chosen where to live, who to live with, blah, 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 all because of a single feeling that I wished to avoid. You know, and it really, like, whoa, oh my God, it feels like, to me, hearing that you say that, it's like the gravitas of, like, the direction of your entire life because of one feeling.
Yeah, it's true. It's exactly true. And I'm only talking one feeling, and you, Matt, you think maybe your listeners can start thinking and having a look at this throughout the day. We just talked about one feeling. You have going to have hundreds of feelings that you don't like. So imagine the velocity of that and the impact that's having on your life and making you do things that you don't really want to do, but just because you like, and a simple thing is when you avoid conflict because I don't like the feeling of conflict. So then you just get treated badly because people take advantage of that all the time. And so instead of standing up for yourself and doing what you need to do, you get pushed in a direction that you don't really want to go, and then you get angry about it, and then you get annoyed, and then you start blaming them. But really the reality is, just because you didn't have the guts or you didn't want to feel your feeling of being uncomfortable with conflict, it's nothing to do with them. There was a point in that conversation where you could have stood up for yourself and said, okay, I'm not doing this. I don't want to do this. Whether it's a simple thing like, I don't want to go down the shop, or I don't want to eat the chocolate just because it's in front of me. It's small decisions all throughout the day. Those feelings, they run deep. They run through everything. So that if you come back to even the smallest things in your life, you can change it from that point.
Something you said before, which I wanted to come back to because I'm just interested in this conversation, and potentially what I'm about to say is full of my own beliefs and biases, as our life experience often is, right? It's influenced by our own kind of thoughts of the world, at least in this particular moment. And so you said before, like, the current and up and coming generation are more distressed by not feeling their feelings. And I think a story that I see with people that I work with who are often 40s, 50s, 60s, that kind of, sometimes 70s as well, is that they come from the generation you described of like, suck it up, get over it, your problems aren't that bad. And I'm curious, like, whether there is a spot that makes sense, and maybe it's different for everybody, because we've got the one generation in the context of this conversation, which is like not dealing with their feelings at all and punishing themselves and destroying their biology in order to compensate for that. And then arguably we've got this up and coming generation who are so emotionally unstable that they can't go to work the second that they stub their toe. And I'm obviously generalizing, and everybody's not the same in either at either end of the spectrum, but there seems to be a huge shift with, I guess I'm a millennial, so millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, we're all adults now, right? And so it seems to be that the lower you go in those generations that I just listed, the more emotionally unstable people are. They'll have a feeling and they need a day off work. And so I'm like, where is the right thing? Because we obviously don't want everybody to punish themselves into submission like the older generation, but also surely society is going to destabilize and just be full of weaklings, which is not good for any society, in my opinion, if we're only sitting in our feelings and having reactions to everything.
Yeah, well, it's a really good question because, yeah, like at the moment you've got the extremes, haven't you? Like you've got the people who are numbed out and they're just completely nuts because they're just completely numb to everything and disconnected. And you've got the other ones who are coming through, like you say, who are just super sensitive, oversensitive, and just don't really want to go near their feelings. But they're the two extremes, like you say. We've got to get back to the middle ground where, yes, you can feel your feelings, but you don't have to numb out to feel your feelings, but you also need to match the feeling with the reality of your life. So like, oh, I stubbed my toe and I don't feel good about it. I'm not going to go to work today. Well, you've got a job, you've got a responsibility to an employer, to yourself, to earn money and survive. So, okay, the stubbed toe, yeah, it hurts, but get on with it. Not in a way to be hard on yourself or to numb out to that. You could still be sensitive to yourself and get on with your life. This is the problem with the spiritual community. I find they're so, I guess, ethereal and vague, and they're also caught.
Drives
in
me
their,
crazy.
Yeah, and they're just so caught in their feelings and all of this murky stuff, muddy stuff.
I often refer to it because I, in my own healing journey, I spent a lot of time with spiritual groups thinking that as a man, I was meant to be this more feminine, flowy, spiritual, vague, whatever. And at some point I just came up against that in a way that I was like, this is not me. And I think as well, that's sort of part of diluting traditional masculinity, another rabbit hole for another day. But as you're describing that, as I pulled myself away from those communities, I could really see what I've sort of now called spiritual narcissism, And it's just like me all the time, me. And everything's okay because expression is the number one value that we all hold, is organic expression. And it's like, great. Well, until you get punched in the face, like what next?
Yeah. Well, then they'll just come up with some other fantasy about why the punch is okay and what I've learned from it. And
totally.
Right. It just goes on and on. They're just ego trippers. But yeah. So yeah, I think the main point there is really that if you've got feelings, and as you learn to feel your feelings and not disconnect and not numb out to them.
Mm-hmm.
There is the risk of getting emotional about your feelings, but you, with this approach, with this natural meditation approach, you always need to match the feeling with the facts. Like I said, with the big toe and the responsible, you've got to look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
I'm a responsible human being. Yes, I don't feel like going to work today, but the facts are if I don't, I'm going to let my employer down. I'm not going to get paid. All these, you've got to look at the whole picture. You can't just go on a whim and go with your feelings and, you know.
Well, that's the entitlement scenario, right?
Yeah. Is
that the world revolves around me.
Yeah, well, it kind of does, but yeah, you still got to make it in the world, don't you?
Well, I think it's important that we acknowledge that we pack animals and we are by default part of an ecosystem, and we have to play our part, whether it be a family member, whether it be a job, whether it be to our friends. There are times, and this goes back to what we were saying before around there should be safe places in our life for us to express ourselves and be vulnerable and real. But if we turn the entire world into that place, then that's a bit selfish and narcissistic, I would argue, because you're forcing everyone in every situation to comply to your needs.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we're all connected. We all affect each other. But that works both ways. So as you said, if you're narcissistic, I think the main difference there is they're not thinking that they're having an effect on people. So they're just completely disconnected from the effect that they are having on people. Mm. And then, yeah, this having no ability to understand anyone else but themselves and their needs. So, yeah, interesting.
And we live in this world of social media where people open their phone to cry, thinking that's real vulnerability. And it's like, oh, but it's so amazing to like express yourself, and that we've got influencers that we follow, and it's like, oh, they're so real on their stories and they just cry and they express themselves. And I always rebut that idea. I don't think that's that vulnerable to cry in a room where there's actually nobody but 1,000 people watching on your phone, because I feel like the hard stuff happens in person.
Yeah, definitely. And if they're just putting on a show, then obviously it's not real.
There's a lot
of actors out there, isn't there, nowadays?
Yeah, totally, totally.
People are getting pretty good at it.
Yeah. No. Well, this conversation's awesome. Like, I feel like we could obviously solve all of society's problems in this one podcast.
Of course.
But you've mentioned the app and we've mentioned meditation a bunch of times. So where can people find you online, the meditation app online? Where are we sending people?
Yeah, so you can go to the Undo app website, which is Undo. I think you're going to link it below or something.
Yeah.
So just Undo app, and you can grab the app from there. It's available on all devices. And we've just literally added in the BTT actually again, which is like it reconnects the body and the mind. So if you've got like a sore shoulder or a sore neck or something, you can look it up in the app and it'll give you a specific body meditation for that part, that body part. And you can also look up mental afflictions as well. So because we reconnect the body and the mind, they work both ways. So if we treat mental health as exactly the same as physical health, we always bring mental health back to a physical part or a physical sensation. Mm-hmm. So that helps people really, really deeply with that. And then I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. I think we can send you the link for that as well, or just look up Kate Zoltan on LinkedIn, and I'm pretty active on there. So I do usually one video per week where I'm talking about mental health. So if you want to have a look at that. And then I guess the other thing would be the YouTube channel. Matthew's YouTube channel is actually really helpful. If you're not sure about doing the app, have a look at his YouTube channel. He's got some really interesting talks. And if you're interested to go further, then you can download the app. And then we also run the meditation retreats, which is quietretreats.co. So we'll send the link through for that as well. But we also thought we'd give your listeners a promo code, which is Maddie2025. And we'll, was it 2025 or Maddie 1?
I think Maddie 1, M-A-T-T-Y 1. Maddie 1.
Lucky, that's right. Yeah, so Maddie 1, M-A-T-T-Y 1. And you can plug that into the app when you download it. It's for 1 month free on an annual subscription.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll pop those links down below so that people can get into your world. And just quickly as well, because there's a handful of meditation apps that are there on the App Store to pick from. What's different about Undo and the method that you and Matthew teach?
Well, it's a body-based approach to meditation. So it's all about the body, whereas all of the others are all thought-based and technique-based. And if it's about mental health, like they're all just all the others, the techniques and the thought-based ones, they're really an addition to yourself, whereas the body-based approach is all about you. It's completely unique to you, and it's like elite self-development is what I call it, or elite self-understanding. So it's specifically about you, whereas if you're doing the techniques and the thought-based ones, as I said, you're adding to yourself, and it's all about the technique that you're adding. So like when you see a Buddhist walking down the street, you see, it doesn't matter where you see a Buddhist, if you ever bump into one, they've all got a certain feeling about them, haven't they? And that's because of the technique or the thought-based, like, hypnosis that they're putting into themselves. So they all end, and that's Buddhism, so they all feel like that. They all end up feeling like that. Same with the Christian as well. You come across the Seventh-day Adventist or something, they've all got a feeling about them, and that's not them. That's the technique or the application of thought that they've added to themselves. Whereas with our meditation, you're going to become yourself. You're going to become the unique individual that you are based on who you are.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I definitely recommend dropping in to the app and getting your hands on it. And I've suggested it to many clients and podcast listeners before. So hopefully a few people pick up on it and head over there as well. I guess from, you know, all the things maybe we've talked about or just your entire journey, the last one that I like to ask people is, what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
The one thing I hope people would learn, at least from this conversation, is that your thoughts are probably the most toxic thing. Like, you can, if you're not thinking thoughts that are healthy, then quantity doesn't matter. It's quality when it comes to thoughts. So that's what I would say on a mental level for health. But on a physical level, I would suggest, and I've been doing this, I thought I might want to tell your listeners about this. It's really cool because I'm always wanting to detox heavy metals and any toxins in my system. So I've got onto this, I've got a really good naturopath, but I always have spirulina in water in the morning. Like you might have to start with a half a teaspoon, but I love it. So I'll have like a full massive tablespoon, as big as I can pile on the spoon actually, and just put it in water and drink it. But if you want to turn that into a heavy metal detox, then you just add wild blueberry powder and dulse flakes as well. And I just mix it all up and have it in a smoothie and drink it at any time throughout the day. Do it away from food. And it really makes a big difference to the toxicity in your body. It just helps all those toxins and everything draw out. And I think that's helped me a lot at this age.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
No problem.
And thanks for coming on the podcast and hanging out. It's been a good conversation.
Yeah, you're so easy to talk to. It's really, really cool. I didn't have to hardly prep for this one at all because you're such a good interviewer. So it was happens.
I did a bunch of prep and I didn't look at any of it. but thanks for being here, and yeah, we'll organize another one in the future and hopefully we can get everybody onto the Undo app.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the response is actually. I hope people enjoyed listening to us and I hope I resonated with them really. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. All right, Kate, we'll catch you soon and we'll chat when we hit stop.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember, too, that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.